Chapter 3. As the clerk drove his old-time quibble slowly and noisily down the street, he said casually to Jason, seated beside him, "I'm picking up a lot of odd material in your mind." "Get out of my mind," Jason said brusquely, with aversion. He had always disliked the prying, curiosity-driven telepaths, and this time was no exception. "Get out of my mind," he said, "and get me to the person who's going to help me. And don't run into any Paul Natt barricades, if you expect to live through this." The clerk said mildly, "You don't have to tell me that. I know what would happen to you if we got stopped. I've done this before, many times, for students. But you're not a student. You're a famous man, and you're rich. But at the same time, you aren't. At the same time, you're a nobody. You don't even exist, legally speaking." He laughed a thin, effete laugh, his eyes fixed on the traffic ahead of him. He drove like an old woman, Jason noted, both hands fixedly hanging on to the steering wheel. Now they had entered the slums of Watts proper. Tiny dark stores on each side of the cluttered streets, overflowing ash cans, the pavement littered with pieces of broken bottles, drab painted signs that advertised Coca-Cola in big letters and the name of the store in small. At an intersection, an elderly black man haltingly crossed, feeling his way along as if blind with age. Seeing him, Jason felt an odd emotion. There were so few blacks alive now, because of Tidman's notorious sterilization bill passed by Congress back in the terrible days of the insurrection. The clerk carefully slowed his rattly quibble to a stop so as not to harass the elderly black man in his rumpled, seam-torn brown suit. Obviously, he felt it too. "Do you realize," the clerk said to Jason, "that if I hit him with my car, it would mean the death penalty for me?" "It should," Jason said. "They're like the last flock of whooping cranes," the clerk said, starting forward now that the old black had reached the far side. "Protected by 1,000 laws. You can't jeer at them. You can't get into a fist fight with one without risking a felony rap. 10 years in prison. Yet we're making them die out. That's what Tidman wanted, and I guess what the majority of silencers wanted, but..." He gestured, for the first time taking a hand off the wheel. "I miss the kids. I remember when I was 10 and I had a black boy to play with. Not far from here, as a matter of fact. He's undoubtedly sterilized by now." "But then he's had one child," Jason pointed out. "His wife had to surrender their birth coupon when their first and only child came. But they've got that child. The law lets them have it. And there are a million statutes protecting their safety." "Two adults, one child," the clerk said. "So the black population is halved every generation. Ingenious. You have to hand it to Tidman. He solved the race problem, all right." "Something had to be done," Jason said. He sat rigidly in his seat, studying the street ahead, searching for a sign of a Paul Natt checkpoint or barricade. He saw neither, but how long were they going to have to continue driving? "We're almost there," the clerk said calmly. He turned his head momentarily to face Jason. "I don't like your racist views," he said, "even if you are paying me $500. "There are enough blacks alive to suit me," Jason said. "And when the last one dies?" Jason said, "You can read my mind. I don't have to tell you." "Christ," the clerk said, and returned his attention to the street traffic ahead. They made a sharp right turn down a narrow alley, at both sides of which closed, locked wooden doors could be seen. No signs here, just shut-up silence, and piles of ancient debris. "What's behind the doors?" Jason asked. "People like you. People who can't come out into the open. But they're different from you in one way. They don't have $500. And a lot more besides, if I read you correctly." "It's going to cost me plenty," Jason said acidly, "to get my ID cards. Probably all I've got." "She won't overcharge you," the clerk said as he brought his quibble to a halt half on the sidewalk of the alley. Jason peered out, saw an abandoned restaurant, boarded up with broken windows. Entirely dark inside. It repelled him, but apparently this was the place. He'd have to go along with it, his need being what it was. He could not be choosy. And they had avoided every checkpoint and barricade along the way. The clerk had picked a good route. So he had damn little to complain about, all things considered. Together, he and the clerk approached the open, hanging, broken front door of the restaurant. Neither spoke. They concentrated on avoiding the rusted nails protruding from the sheets of plywood hammered into place, presumably to protect the windows. "Hang on to my hand," the clerk said, extending it in the shadowy dimness that surrounded them. "I know the way, and it's dark. The electricity was turned off on this block 3 years ago. To try to get the people to vacate the buildings here so that they could be burned down." He added, "But most of them stayed on." The moist, cold hand of the hotel clerk led him past what appeared to be chairs and tables, heaped up into irregular tumbles of legs and surfaces, interwoven with cobwebs and grainy patterns of dirt. They bumped at last against a black, unmoving wall. There the clerk stopped, retrieved his hand, fiddled with something in the gloom. "I can't open it," he said as he fiddled. "It can only be opened from the other side, her side. What I'm doing is signaling that we're here." A section of the wall groaningly slid aside. Jason, peering, saw into nothing more than additional darkness and abandonment. "Step on through," the clerk said, and maneuvered him forward. The wall, after a pause, slid shut again behind them. Lights winked on. Momentarily blinded, Jason shielded his eyes and then took a good look at her workshop. It was small, but he saw a number of what appeared to be complex and highly specialized machines. On the far side, a workbench. Tools by the hundreds, all neatly mounted in place on the walls of the room. Below the workbench, large cartons, probably containing a variety of papers, and a small, generator-driven printing press. And the girl. She sat on a high stool, hand arranging a line of type. He made out pale hair, very long but thin, dribbling down the back of her neck onto her cotton work shirt. She wore jeans, and her feet, quite small, were bare. She appeared to him to be, at a guess, 15 or 16. No breasts to speak of, but good long legs. He liked that. She wore no makeup whatsoever, giving her features a white, slightly pastel tint. "Hi," she said. The clerk said, "I'm going. I'll try not to spend the $500 in one place." Touching a button, he caused the section of wall to slide aside. As it did so, the lights in the workroom clicked out, leaving them once again in absolute darkness. From her stool, the girl said, "I'm Kathy." "I'm Jason," he said. The wall had slid shut now, and the lights had come on again. "She's really very pretty," he thought. except that she had a passive, almost listless quality about her. As if nothing to her, he thought, is worth a damn. Apathy? No, he decided. She was shy. That was the explanation.
You gave him $500 to bring you here?
Kathy said wonderingly. She surveyed him critically, as if seeking to make some kind of value judgment about him, based on his appearance. My suit isn't usually this rumpled, Jason said.
It's a nice suit. Silk?
Yes. He nodded.
Are you a student?
Kathy asked, still scrutinizing him.
No, you're not.
You don't have that pulpy, pasty color they have from living subsurface.
Well, that leaves only one other possibility.
That I'm a criminal, Jason said, trying to change my identity before poles and nets get me.
Are you?
She said, with no sign of uneasiness. It was a simple, flat question. No. He did not amplify, not at that moment. Perhaps later. Kathy said,
Do you think a lot of those gnats are robots and not real people? They always have those gas masks on, so you can't really tell.
I'm content just to dislike them, Jason said, without looking into it any further.
What ID do you need?
Driver's license? Police file ident card? Proof of employment at a legal job? He said, everything. Including membership tab in the Musicians Union Local 12.
Oh. You're a musician.
She regarded him with more interest now. I'm a vocalist, he said. I host an hour-long TV variety show Tuesday night at 9. Maybe you've seen it. The Jason Taverner Show.
I don't own a TV set anymore,
the girl said. So I guess I wouldn't recognize you.
Is it fun to do?
Sometimes. You meet a lot of showbiz people, and that's fine if that's what you like. I found them mostly to be people like anybody else. They have their fears. They're not perfect. Some of them are very funny, both on and off camera.
My husband always used to tell me I have no sense of humor, the girl said. He thought everything was funny. He even thought it was funny when he was drafted into the Nats.
Did he still laugh by the time he got out? Jason asked.
He never did. He was killed in a surprise attack by students. But it wasn't their fault. He was shot by a fellow Nat.
Jason said, How much is it going to cost me to get my full set of ID? You better tell me now before you start on them.
I charge people what they can afford, Kathy said,
once more setting up her line of type.
I'm going to charge you a lot because I can tell you're rich. By the way, you gave Eddie $500 to get you here and buy your suit.
Okay? Briefly, she glanced in his direction.
Or am I wrong? Tell me.
I have $5,000 on me, Jason said. Or rather, less 500. I'm a world-famous entertainer. I work a month every year at the Sands, in addition to my show. In fact, I appear at a number of first-class clubs when I can squeeze them into my tight schedule.
Gee, Kathy said. I wish I had heard of you. Then I could be impressed.
He laughed.
Did I say something stupid?
Kathy asked timidly.
No,
Jason said. Kathy, how old are you?
I'm 19. My birthday is in December, so I'm almost 20.
How old did you think I am by looking at me?
About 16, he said.
Her mouth turned down in a childlike pout.
That's what everybody says,
she said in a low voice.
It's because I don't have any bosom. If I had a bosom, I'd look 21. How old are you?
She stopped fiddling with her type and eyed him intently.
I'd guess about 50. Fury flowed through him, and misery.
You look like your feelings are hurt, Kathy said. I'm 42, Jason said tightly.
Well, what's the difference? I mean, they're both.
Let's get down to business, Jason broke in. Give me a pen and paper and I'll write down what I want and what I want each card to say about me. I want this done exactly right. You better be good.
I made you mad, Kathy said, by saying you look 50.
I guess on closer examination you really don't. You look about 30. She handed him pen and paper, smiling shyly and apologetically. Jason said, forget it. He patted her on the back.
I'd rather people didn't touch me, Kathy said.
She slid away. Like a fawn in the woods, he thought. Strange. She's afraid to be touched even a little, and yet she's not afraid to forge documents. A felony that could get her 20 years in prison. Maybe nobody bothered to tell her it's against the law. Maybe she doesn't know. Something bright and colorful on the far wall caught his attention. He walked over to inspect it. A medieval illuminated manuscript, he realized. Or rather, a page from it. He had read about them, but up until now he had never set eyes on one. Is this valuable? He asked.
If it was the real thing, it might be worth $100, Kathy said. But it's not.
I made it years ago when I was in junior high school at North American Aviation. I copied it, the original, 10 times before I had it right. I love good calligraphy. Even when I was a kid, I did. Maybe it's because my father designed book covers. You know, the dust jackets. He said, would this fool a museum? For a moment, Kathy gazed intently at him. And then she nodded yes. Wouldn't they know by the paper?
It's parchment, and it's from that period.
That's the same way you fake old stamps. You get an old stamp that's worthless, eradicate the imprint, then... She paused.
You're anxious for me to get to work on your ID, she said.
Yes, Jason said. He handed her the piece of paper on which he had written the information. Most of it called for Paul Natt's standard post-curfew tags, with thumbprints and photographs and holographic signatures, and everything with short expiration dates. He'd have to get a whole new set forged within 3 months.
$2,000, Kathy said, studying the list.
He felt like saying, for that, do I get to go to bed with you too? But aloud he said, how long will it take?
Hours, days?
And if it's days, where am I?
Hours, Kathy said.
He experienced a vast wave of relief.
Sit down and keep me company, Kathy said,
pointing to a 3-legged stool pushed off to one side.
You can tell me about your career as a successful TV personality. It must be fascinating, all the bodies you have to walk over to get to the top.
Or did you get to the top?
Yes, he said shortly. But there's no bodies. That's a myth.
You make it on talent and talent alone, not what you do or say to other people, either above or below you. And it's work. You don't breeze in and do a soft shoe shuffle and then sign your contract with NBC or CBS. They're tough, experienced businessmen. Especially the A&R people. Artists and repertoire. They decide who to sign. I'm talking about records now. That's where you have to start to be on a national level. Of course, you can work club dates all over everywhere until...
Here's your quibble driver's license, Kathy said.
She carefully passed him a small black card.
Now I'll get started on your military service status chit. That's a little harder because of the full face and profile photos, but I can handle that over there.
She pointed at a white screen, in front of which stood a tripod with camera, a flash gun mounted at its side.
"You have all the equipment," Jason said as he fixed himself rigidly against the white screen.
So many photos had been taken of him during his long career that he always knew exactly where to stand and what expression to reveal. But apparently he had done something wrong this time. Kathy, a severe expression on her face, surveying him.
"You're all lit up," she said, half to herself. "You're glowing in some sort of phony way."
"Publicity stills," Jason said. 8x10 glossy.
"These aren't. These are to keep you out of a forced labor camp for the rest of your life. Don't smile."
He didn't.
"Good," Kathy said.
She ripped the photos from the camera, carried them cautiously to her workbench, waving them to dry them.
"These damn 3D animateds they want on the military service papers. That camera cost me $1,000, and I need it only for this and nothing else. But I have to have it."
She eyed him.
"It's going to cost you."
"Yes," he said stonily. He felt aware of that already. For a time, Kathy puttered, and then, turning abruptly toward him, she said,
"Who are you really? You're used to posing. I saw you. I saw you freeze with that glad, smiling place and those lit-up eyes."
"I told you. I'm Jason Taverner, the TV personality guest host. I'm on every Tuesday night."
"No,"
Kathy said. She shook her head.
"But it's none of my business. Sorry. I shouldn't have asked."
But she continued to eye him as if with exasperation.
"You're doing it all wrong. You really are a celebrity. It was reflexive, the way you posed for your picture. But you're not a celebrity. There's no one named Jason Taverner who matters, who is anything. So what are you, then? A man who has his picture taken all the time that no one's ever seen or heard of."
Jason said, "I'm going about it the way any celebrity who no one has ever heard of would go about it." For a moment she stared at him, and then she laughed.
"I see. Well, that's cool. That's really cool. I'll have to remember that."
She turned her attention back to the documents she was forging.
"In this business," she said, absorbed in what she was doing, "I don't want to get to know people I'm making cards for. But,"
she glanced up,
"I'd sort of like to know you. You're strange. I've seen a lot of types. Hundreds, maybe. But none like you. Do you know what I think?"
"You think I'm insane," Jason said.
"Yes."
Kathy nodded.
"Clinically, legally, whatever. You're psychotic.
You have a split personality. Mr. No One and Mr. Everyone.
How have you survived up until now?"
He said nothing. It could not be explained.
"Okay,"
Kathy said. One by one, expertly and efficiently, she forged the necessary documents. Eddie, the hotel clerk, lurked in the background, smoking a fake Havana cigar. He had nothing to say or do, but for some obscure reason he hung around. "I wish he'd fuck off," Jason thought to himself. "I'd like to talk to her more."
"Come with me,"
Kathy said suddenly. She slid from her work stool and beckoned him toward a wooden door at the right of her bench. "I want your signature 5 times, each a little different from the others so they can't be superimposed. That's where so many documenters..." She smiled as she opened the door. "That's what we call ourselves. That's where so many of us fuck it up. They take one signature and transfer it to all the documents. See?" "Yes," he said, entering the musty little closet-like room after her. Kathy shut the door, paused a moment, then said,
"Eddie is a police fink."
Staring at her, he said, "Why?"
Why? Why what? Why is he a police fink? For money. For the same reason I am.
Jason said, God damn you. He grabbed her by the right wrist, tugged her toward him. She grimaced as his fingers tightened. And he's already...
Eddie hasn't done anything yet,
she grated, trying to free her wrist.
That hurts. Look, calm down and I'll show you, okay?
Reluctantly, his heart hammering in fear, he let her go. Kathy turned on a bright, small light, laid 3 forged documents in the circle of its glare.
A purple dot on the margin of each, she said,
indicating the almost invisible circle of color.
A microtransmitter, so you'll emit a bleep every 5 seconds as you move around. They're after conspiracies. They want the people you're with.
Jason said harshly, I'm not with anyone.
But they don't know that.
She massaged her wrist, frowning in a girlish, sullen way.
You TV celebrities no one's ever heard of sure have quick reactions, she murmured.
Why did you tell me? Jason asked. After doing all the forging, all the...
I want you to get away, she said simply.
Why? He still did not understand.
Because, hell, you've got some sort of magnetic quality about you. I noticed it as soon as you came into the room. You're...
She groped for the word.
Sexy. Even at your age.
My presence, he said.
Yes.
Kathy nodded.
I've seen it before in public people from a distance, but never up close like this.
I can see why you imagine you're a TV personality. You really seem like you are. He said, how do I get away? Are you going to tell me that, or does that cost a little more?
God. You're so cynical.
He laughed and again took hold of her by the wrist.
I guess I don't blame you,
Kathy said, shaking her head and making a mask-like face.
Well, first of all, you can buy Eddie off. Another 500 should do it. Me, you don't have to buy off. If, and only if, and I mean it, if you stay with me a while. You have a lure, like a good perfume. I respond to you, and I just never do that with men.
With women, then? He said tartly. It passed her without registering.
Will you? She said.
Hell, he said. I'll just leave. Reaching, he opened the door behind her, shoved past her and out into her workroom. She followed rapidly. Among the dim, empty shadows of the abandoned restaurant, she caught up with him. She confronted him in the gloom. Panting, she said,
You've already got a transmitter planted on you.
I doubt it, he answered.
It's true. Eddie planted it on you.
Bullshit, he said, and moved away from her toward the light of the restaurant's sagging, broken front door. Pursuing him like a deft-footed herbivore, Kathy gasped,
But suppose it's true. It could be.
At the half-available doorway, she interposed herself between him and freedom. Standing there, her hands lifted as if to ward off a physical blow, she said swiftly,
Stay with me one night. Go to bed with me. Okay? That's enough. I promise. Will you do it? For just one night?
He thought, something of my abilities, my alleged and well-known properties have come with me to this strange place I now live in. This place where I do not exist except on forged cards manufactured by a Paul Fink. Eerie, he thought, and he shuddered. Cards with microtransmitters built into them to betray me and everyone with me to the polls. I haven't done very well here. Except that, as she says, I've got a lure.
Jesus, he thought.
And that's all that stands between me and a forced labor camp. Okay, he said then. It seemed the wiser choice, by far.
Go pay Eddie, she said. Get that over with and him out of here.
I wondered why he's still hanging around, Jason said. Did he send more money?
I guess so, Kathy said.
You do this all the time, Jason said as he got out his money. S.O.P. Standard operating procedure. And he had tumbled for it. Kathy said blithely,
Eddie is psionic.